Okay. Thanks everyone for joining us. This will be our last live Q&A town hall of the year. We have a few things to talk about before we get to the questions. And we'll probably have time to answer any questions that people have just in chat, which you can use while we're here. But first, let's go ahead and introduce ourselves in case you haven't been to our previous ones or haven't seen us since quarter end game. My name is Juniper, and I'm the community dev manager.
I'm Alice. You guys know me. Same great time, different great place.
I'm Stormfield, your live operations manager.
I'm sorry.
And with that, Sariel, you will be up first talking about the first topic of the day.
All right, so we've got a new global we're going to launch. Starts January 1st, runs to February 1st. It is winter themed, Christmas adjacent. You will have a list of items that you can buy with tokens. We're gonna offer multiple ways to attain tokens, like boss kills, buying it with practice points, quest points, tourmalines. We'll be scattered around, and it's just gonna be a list of fun items. Like we're not thinking Dvuzmor's level stuff. It's not in-game gear. It's just fun stuff to play around with. We are knee deep in design for that, and should have it ready for you in January.
All right, awesome. Stormfield, over to you.
Thank you so much, Juniper, and thank you, Sauriel. Your succinctness is just one of my favorite things. My role at this point is to speak about something that we were, I'm going to say, waist deep in designing, and that was the updated rules. Yeah, we're going to go there very briefly. At the very top of that rules document, we have a mission statement. We aim for Materia Magica to be a welcoming and safe community for all people, where players are encouraged to engage in cooperative efforts and healthy competition. That's the mission statement. Yes, there is the condemning, rather, of abuses of the systems in place as outlined. I'm not going to read them off. They're available in-game. However, I make a note of what that mission statement is because we spent a lot of time ensuring that our amazing community dev manager, Juniper, had the tools that she needed, and there were areas of the previous rule set that were falling a little short. The main goal for the rules is, again, not just to empower the community management, but also to help encourage a new wave of players. That's the overall goal. We want to see more names online day to day, week to week, month to month, and hopefully year to year. But to do that, we just had to make some changes. If you have any additional questions or comments about those rules as they're written, well, there's plenty of time to answer those in the Q&A right at the end.
All right, thanks. And to kick off the last topic, which is pretty exciting, I'm going to hand it over to Alice.
Hey guys, so I'm here to talk to you tonight about some of the improvements that have been happening on the back end. And what is the back end? Server's been improving. We've been working on website updates. Those are the most succinct things that you guys don't get to see very often. There were a couple of questions that we're going to address in the QA section shortly, but they had to do with this particular chunk of the discussion. Halifir asked about what about Clan Anduin effectively? Like, what kind of support can the players expect to get externally from that? Our materiamagica.com website will be the new home for that sort of material. We're bringing everything in-house. And it's going to take us a little bit of time, but we have a timeline in place and we're working on like concrete dates with real road maps and actual like work backward from expectations and all this stuff. And as we know more, we can give you better dates. The other question that was asked along this same line, Vaison asked about plans to update the EQDB so we can search by other features. All those functionalities are integrated similarly. So that would be, we have the EQDB command to access the equipment database. Such expansions would allow for things like NPC database or quest database or et cetera. You know, there's anything that can be put into a database, we can effectively query that way if we so desire. And those commands will be reciprocal one-to-one on the website and in the game. So you'll be able to utilize them in both places. One of the things we do have, what is the website project? Ultimately, everything that Mush currently does and everything that Anowin used to do better than it does currently, all of that functionality is going to end up on our website. So eventually, we won't have to use Mush to access the game. Eventually, we won't have to use any external third-party stuff that doesn't come from our company or our community. It'll be right there housed on our forums, on our websites. If other people want to continue to do that sort of support or other clans want to do that, that's definitely an option. We're not going to discourage that in any capacity. We'll have the connectors necessary to help populate similar databases on other people's websites if that's what they want to do. So that functionality is really exciting. So I say exciting because it's new age stuff and it removes barriers of entry for new players to come and access our game. The reality is, to most people, it's not that exciting. It's just a better way to access the game, which is the game is the exciting part, not the accessibility part. But we're really, really excited about the accessibility. But one of the major improvements that's coming along with moving into the new environment, the website environment, is the mapper is getting upgraded. We have a lot of areas in the game where they're non-geometric, labyrinthine, if you will. The intent is to create a mapping environment that's capable of handling stuff like that and better telegraphing ups and downs and layers amongst floors. One of the things that we have is a video for you guys that is a short demo of where we're at now with the mapper stuff, which is like, let's call it version 0.33. You know, we've still got, we're about 33% of the way where I want to be. It's the vast majority of the hard work. But the other stuff is the nuance, and the nuance is what really matters. So if Sario would be so kind as to cue that video up, we can drop it for you guys here.
Sario moved that video. You can actually find it in recorded town halls. It was just linked. If you want to go check that out.
Awesome, awesome. So that'll be there for you guys. I'm not gonna like screen share it and make you guys sit here through 5 minutes of it. Some of you maybe don't care, and that's okay. But the video's there. It's a short little demo. If there's feel free to comment on it. Like, if there's functionality that you particularly like, great. If there's functionality that you see that is immediately lacking and hasn't been addressed, we might know it already, but at the same time, we might not at the same time. So feel free to comment positively and negatively on what you see there. And I think that handles number three.
Yes. So we can go ahead and go into the questions. Just in advance, thanks for everyone who gave us questions. The first one, I apologize if you're here and I say it wrong, Shun, asked, where does PKing fall under the harassment and grief policies? That's a really important question, and it's something that when these rules came about, they weren't just made willy-nilly. We still have conversations, like, as of today about this stuff, like, to really understand that, like, this is what we believe in and like what exactly this all falls under. So it was Alice or Stormfield, if you want to get into the specifics of that, go ahead.
I'm happy to do that. Actually, I'm really passionate about this one because it's such a wonderful question, and it's also incredibly difficult to answer. So my objective here is to be as generic as possible, but also to give you as much of the straightforward ideology that matters to us here. So first off, we kind of got stuck in this interesting world, harassment slash griefing. There's lots of definitions for this. Everybody probably has their own individual definition, but for the sake of our conversation, harassment is a personal issue. That's an attack on me as a human or my kids or my family or my personal life or my weight or my gender or any of that stuff. Harassment is not acceptable under any circumstance whatsoever. Period. In game, you know, if you want to keep role play rules in place, you know, a smelly ogre is an acceptable insult. That's an in-game metric, and there will be no punishment for in-game flaming on people. That having been said, what is griefing then? So griefing is an extension of playing the game in a way that harasses. Griefing is a way of playing the game in a way that bothers another person. And okay, so what does that mean? Like, anybody can say anything, just bothers them. So we actually sat down and we kind of gave this some thought in terms of what is quantifying this mean. Griefing consists in two major forms. It exists in the form of camping, which is where I'm going to sit in the same spot and bar entry. And it exists in the form of hunting, which is where I'm going to get you. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care where you go. You're my target. You're what I'm going to get today. And until you quit playing, that's what my objective is. Both of those forms of gameplay, they have a time and they have a place, but there's also an upper boundary to it. If somebody wants to say, today, I'd like to go camp the moat. I'm a PKer and this is the thing that I enjoy doing. That's still an option for you. What you're not allowed to do, though, is sit there for hours and hours all day long and make it a 24/7 agenda of you personally to stop people from being able to access that content. It's okay to be a trapdoor spider. It's not okay to be a bridge troll. And, you know, right now we don't have the ability to implement this stuff system-wide. I mean, we have the ability, but we need the bandwidth, I should say, to implement these sorts of parameters system-wide, and we need to talk about them a little more. But like camping, to provide an example of definition, would be you in an 8-hour window or in a 6-hour window, how long is an individual allowed to stay in a blocking fashion, hold the gates, so to speak. So that's one of the avenues we're discussing on how to make system level changes. And the other is the hunting thing I was talking to you about. So I've killed you in one zone. You've left. I've killed you in another zone. You leave again. And now I'm hunting you in a third zone. Talks have been had. We're discussing what it would look like to cause the system to barricade the third attack. So if you want to attack someone, that's fine. If you want to fight them in an area, that's fine. If you want to camp that area, that's also fine. But following people around for the sole purpose of trying to get them to quit or harass them or whatever, that's not accepted gameplay either. And so those are just recap those really quick. Leave real life out of it. In-game role play insults are only. Camping, you know, you're allowed to do it, but keep it within reason and right until we have a system in place that's administrator discretion. Hunting, if you follow someone to a third zone and attack them and someone reports you doing that, administration will probably take action. And then the last one is the level gap. And that's just simply deciding at what level can another player not be attacked by someone higher than them. And that's already in place. So to answer Shun's question directly, we have four levers that we're actively entertaining on how are we going to use these to create, back to the mission statement, to create a fair and engaging environment where we can help each other and we can fight each other. We can also do these things while being respectful of each other's time and space. So that's the answer to Shun's question.
And again, apologize if I say it wrong. Brioni had kind of like a follow-up of saying, since a lot of this is subjective, can we institute a warning system? This was also brought up before in just like regular chat in the channels. That's something that we can talk about and expand on more when we have that solidified for everyone.
And yeah, I think that's an absolutely fair request. And to address the heart of the request very specifically, none of these rules are designed to trap or punish anyone. Nothing would make me happier than the administration just being able to say, hey, You found the line. You know, we don't have a good answer for this right now, but would you please just stop doing that? And then it just stops. That would be the absolute best circumstance ever. Historically, that isn't usually what happens. Usually when that happens, the friends of the person who got in trouble think it's cute to go replicate the behavior. And like, that really sucks. But for the most part, the intent is for everybody to enjoy playing the game in a fair way. You know, Stormfield used an example earlier that I really, really appreciated. And it was non-voluntary combat. You know, it's one thing to say, I'm going to get into the boxing ring and I'm going to get into the boxing ring with a world champion. I'm just there to sweat it out and lose 5 pounds. But this guy is going to punch me in the dome so hard that I'm going down. But at the same time, I put on the gloves, I took off my shirt, and I got in the ring, just like the other person did. And when I got knocked out, I get out of the ring, and that's okay. I put my shirt back on, and I go out in the parking lot, and I get in the car, and I go home. As soon as that guy follows me to my car or my parking lot, that's not voluntary anymore. That doesn't feel good. And like, if somebody wants to fight in the parking lot or in their house, they can be a duelist and do that kind of crap. That's fine. But if not, we'd really rather people keep it in the designated PK areas and, like, you know, not try to use the game to troll other people is really the heart of it. So, yes, to reiterate all about those warnings.
Stormfield, did you want to add on to that at all, or go to the next question?
I think Alice performed beautifully.
I agree. So it's like the next question is from Nister. Can there be relics for 65 and below gear? As well as wondering if there is a possibility for a relic bag for the weight reducer for those of us that can't help themselves.
Yeah, so we've got kind of a two-parter here. The first one is an easy yes. The only barrier between us having more relics is simply people making them. And, you know, what is making them? A name and what affects you're looking for. It doesn't even have to be a numerical value. Like, if you want hit points, I don't need 7 hit points or 38 hit points, just the value, like hit points. We can figure out what's fair and balanced based on like level restrictions and all that other crap. But, clever names and what affects you're looking for are really the only things that are the barriers there, with a well-drafted document. And we can add a tab to the, Materia Magica player submission document if that would be helpful. That's the kind of situation where just keep populating them as you think about them. And when density hits like 25, 30, somebody just ping me and we can get all of them implemented at one time. And as far as the second part of the question, relic bags. So here's the thing you're going to run into. The answer isn't inherently no. The system can do it. The problem you're going to run into is we're trying to figure out how to optimize for data storage right now. And anything that allows players to hold more items than we already can is actually a problem. So as far as like, where's the end of that rope? I don't actually know. You know, if somebody were like, what about a 6th trunk? Well, hell no, sorry. That's mathematically unfeasible. I hate to do this to Kyrthos, but the only person that could authorize that sort of change to me would be Kyrthos, because he's the one who understands exactly what that would do to the system. And if we could do it, what are the safe ways to do it? So I'm going to punt that to him in the context of let him think about it for a little bit. And if we come up with a good answer, it'll show up. If we don't, then it won't. Sorry. And like, that's just kind of it. We're trying to come up with all kinds of ways to make interacting with the various components of the game easier. And by components, I specifically mean storage related components. That's, you know, scrolls for the Mark of Scrolls or the manuals for the Romantic Mini or whatever the things are that require us to carry around 700 objects each. We're trying to find ways to tokenize those and remove their burden from the startup process and the saving process from the game. So tentatively, we'll see. So yes to level 65 and below relics, and we shall see in, as it pertains to the relic bag weight reducer.
Okay, thank you. Looks like next question is going to be from Faison. Any chance there are plans to make bosses scale down to the amount of players?
Succinctly, nope. And, you know, I mean, I can say that pretty abruptly and easily because realistically speaking, everything we're doing right now is with the intent to market ourselves. You know, I mean, I know that that's been said before and people have heard that over years and years, but like there's a shitload of money and effort going into overhauling literally every moving part of this game right now. And the intent is we're bracing for a universe where we have thousands of players. And to give you a better answer, like that was the bureaucratic answer, and I apologize. I'll give you a better answer than that because you deserve it. The better answer is we don't need to do that, and I'll tell you why. If there's a specific boss that you have a problem with, if there's a functionality there, or there's some mechanic that's just wrong, I definitely want to hear about that. But if the crux of your complaint is you want more single player content, I would rather wait till phase three because like the end of phases one and two will involve us labeling and documenting all the tools our developers will have to build new content with. And I would rather make new content that scales to the number of players than go back and edit existing content. From an agency perspective, part of that is out of respect to the people who made that content, because that wasn't always the people who were frequently not the people who were currently on staff, almost unilaterally not. So we try not to just destroy other people's work while at the same time, I understand where you're coming from. And I love soloing things. I love being able to do things with just like the core constituency of players. We have another very good answer to your question is we have aggressively discussed the level adjust flag. There are a lot of moving parts and implications that have to be considered before we can like fully solidify that. But a way we can make content scale appropriately to the number of players is let's use second class content just as a hypothetical example. What if you're a 120 and you're online and you want to do these bosses before you multi-class and you simply can't, there's not enough people around, you don't know how, whatever. The level adjusted flag would make it so that an Archon could go on that run with you, and the healing it does to you would be the equivalent of someone your level, and it would take damage percentage-wise as if it were your level. It's a major system pain in the ass, and I'm not 100% sure we can pull it off or we would already have done it. But level adjust is one way we plan to make stuff scale better, and add more players is a way we want to make stuff scale better, and add scalar content is a way we would make stuff scale better. I would really prefer not on a blanket level to make any commitments to adjusting any particular encounter, boss encounter or mark encounter or whatever. But if there are some you think that are onerous, you know, I will even give you an example. Big Shmug is big bullshit. Some of the best players in the game have gone in there and tried that, and it's a giant troll fest. It's not fun. It's not fun to lose. It will not be fun to win. And everyone knows this, and everyone's like, why bother trying? That's not a victory anybody's interested in. If you genuinely feel that way about content, please, please reach out to us via email or send me a tell or a page of parchment. It'll get to me. Like, I love this game. I'm very passionate about being fun and challenging. I'm committed to both, but there's an upper limit to challenging or the fun just goes away. So I'd like to preserve that for you guys in literally every way possible.
I will say, even using the support ticketing system, like, You don't have to just use it to report things, or like if you have an issue, feel free to send an email about something like that, and I will hand it directly to Alice. But for the next question, this is kind of a twofer that Faison and Sheehan asked. Are there plans to update EQDB so you can search by race or class, or add all the items in the game to it and have additional information on where the item is obtained?
So this is another multiple moving parts question. The EQDB part is, so we'll just start at the beginning of that one. All right, so are there plans to update the EQDB so we can search by race or class? On its face, the answer is no, because you would not type EQDB barbarian or fish or aboleth or Valkyrie. That would be integrated into the help system. And so right now, when we got started with new help file documentation, the first round was areas, the second round was bosses, and the third round, while it's not mandatory to write the help files, from a continuity perspective, we need an advanced search tool that we don't currently have, or rather we have it, but it currently doesn't work. And rather than build it in C, like fix it in C, we're just going to rebuild it in Rust so we have a new one. That system allows us to query by race in the game. And then the third step of that is help files for every race in the game. So the boss data will tell you the areas they come from. You know, this boss can be found in this area. The race information will give you a generic description of what that race is that should be true across all instances of that race in the world. So it's not nuanced to a given NPC. It's only nuanced to the race itself. The other major improvement we're waiting on there, this is a phase three thing as well, as body parts. Because right now, even our pterodactyls are four-legged quadrupeds, which infuriates me beyond compare. And then the question that we discussed earlier in terms of plans to update the EQDB, while it'll be help files for races and classes, the EQDB will be expanded to handle quest database, etc. There's a piece of this that I'm not willing to answer at this point, but I am willing to acknowledge the question. There are items in the game that are currently not queryable via EQDB. That's one of the hearts of one of these questions here. I don't want to hand wave over that, because it would seem very easy to just say, just let us look up everything. And I'm air quoting the word everything as I say that. Because I get it. As a player, if it's in the game, you want to be able to see what it is. I understand totally. The problem is whenever you put on your administrator hat, there are thousands of items in this game that exist that are not actually in the game. It might be an item that is invisible, that's held on an invisible object that allows the environment to function the way it does, the players are never supposed to interact with. We don't have flags on any of that stuff. Those flags didn't exist, say immortal tool or whatever. So everything that's in the database has to be manually added, effectively, is the short answer. I mean, we can do it by VNum range, but if we do it by VNum range, we have to then scour that VNum range and make sure we've caught every single instance of something that can't be displayed and flag it. And in a world where we have tens of thousands of objects, I'd love to do that. You know, in a future universe, that's a stretch goal. But on its face, that's a giant lift. And that's some phase three stuff. So it'll be a few months before we can really dig into that. I will say, if we have to do a pass over all the items in the game, which is something we're very, very badly trying to not have to do, but if we did have to do that, one of the things we could do at that point would be entertain that, adding that flag in and restricting those things from visibility so that we could provide more transparency. And the last piece of clarity I'll add to that is the major crux of decisions that will predicate us being able to make this decision is deciding what's up with the Sigil Underground. And I say that from the perspective of, is it going to stay CPK forever? Is it going to stay the same version of Anomalous Regen forever? Is the equipment database going to intentionally obfuscate the items because they're, quote, SUG, end quote, forever? We haven't answered those yet. Sigil Underground's difficulty and scale and intensity was set in a vacuum. And the person who set those intensities is not around anymore. So we, as the player base, whenever phase three opens up, that will be one of the biggest conversations we have whenever I can give you guys a map of the Sigil Underground, we're going to talk about, like, as an actual community, what do we think is a fair way to go about playing down there? And it ties back into that objective of what's fair PK, what's fair gameplay, what's fun on top of fair, because it needs to be both. Lots of expansion. We're adding help files. We're adding more database commands. We're still struggling with items that are not currently listed in the best way to handle that. I think that's the sum of the answer to that one.
Just in case Hellifer wasn't here at the beginning, your question about adding support to community sites, ultimately that's something we're going to be hosting on our own. So next question is from Wabbit. They're wondering about if the promised prizes from the Hydra event will materialize.
I'm going to be really, really transparent with you guys. I wasn't actively playing the game. And at that point in time, I was actively working to make money to pay for the game. So I wasn't around when all the Hydra stuff went out. And I don't know what Sean actually committed to. What I'm hoping is that he sent out an email blast in conjunction with that. The major situation that we have here is I don't know what the challenges were and I don't know what the rewards were. And I need some kind of documentation from within the game or an email from us or something so that I can say, yeah, this is what the intent was. How do we follow through on that? And I personally apologize for this because I honestly had no idea there were pending, not paid out prize rewards just chilling from that crap. I thought when we got the characters moved over that was the end of the Hydra debacle. So if you have any documentation, or more importantly, if you can find it in a news article in the game, or like, I know it's publicized somewhere, I just can't find it. So help us out. Send us some official, and we will follow through promptly.
Score, well, we did look through the old Discord, but we'll look through it again. This isn't anything that we're going to just kind of sweep under the rug. So thank you, Wabbit, for bringing it up. Prothus was wondering, approaching the year mark from the Rust transition, we still crash almost on a daily basis, sometimes far more than that. Is there any outlook towards true stability, like less than a crash a week? He also wants to know if pirates will be turned on again.
Okay, so another two-pronger. I am going to answer these in reverse. So as far as pirates are concerned, pirates are one of the things that, because of how they function, they were a crash vector and crash in the game just for simply existing. As far as turning them back on, that is at the discretion of the staff. If they've fixed the crash bug, then we'll turn them back on. If they haven't, then turning them back on is something we could do if that's what everybody wants. But if we haven't repaired that crash vector, then it's going to be yet another way that brings us down. Which brings me to the first half of the question, which is about general stability and what are the true expectations. And first off, I'll start off by saying thanks again to everybody. This has been a long process. I appreciate everyone's patience and attendance and participation in this entire process. It's been very grueling. The first half of this year was really rough. The second half of this year has been phenomenal. The first half of next year is I'm more excited for the game's sake for next calendar year than I have been in over a decade. The improvements that are coming are world-changing in terms of stability, in terms of accessibility, you know, and to not rabbit hole too bad and actually address Prothus's concern. While it does not feel that way, are crashing significantly less than we were 3 months ago. There's actually two answers to this question. The first one is a defensive answer because it's dealing with the state of now. The second answer is the true solution. That's the genie, and that's the we've made the wish, and the genie is fulfilling an answer. So the first one is, we are currently living in a haunted mansion that is a game. And every time a ghost gets angry, the game crashes. We have a team of people whose job it is to effectively be Ghostbusters. The problem is the haunted mansion is so haunted that we could bust every ghost in the house and five more will just come to life because the house is that haunted. The solution to this is not rebuild each room in the house one at a time, move all the furniture out, rebuild it, move the furniture back in. The answer is buy the lot next door, build a house that is not haunted, move into that one, and then burn the old house the hell down. So the Ghostbuster team is doing everything they can to increase our life stability. The intent on the current server, like before we do the full Rust conversion and flip the switch on moving into the new house, the intent is to get to 7-day stability. We reboot right now. And the best thing for the staff for evolving the game is to reboot on a weekly cadence so that we can continue to update and test and improve and iterate in a meaningful and measurable and anticipated manner. So our short-term objective in the current haunted mansion we're living in is to get us a 7-day contiguous uptime, with the only downtime being when we bring the game down to reboot. That's the intent. Will we hit that objective? No, we will not. That's the objective, though. And what will happen, whenever the Rust conversion is done, we will flip the switch, and we will not be in the old house anymore. We'll be in the new house. And when that happens, we don't have any more ghosts. We don't have any more memory leaks. We don't, like, our biggest problem right now is we have two programming languages and they don't translate to each other nicely. Zero means something in one that it doesn't mean in the other. And like, that's okay. It's just taking us a lot of time to move the pieces around and transition them all from one state, or rather from two states into one state. And we're anticipating that completion in the first half of next calendar year. We have made wonderful progress. I'm not going to dig into the details on the progress we have made too much because it steals the thunder from our roadmap trajectory. And the roadmap is one of the, that's the big town hall I'm really excited for. Like, whenever I can actually sit down and give you guys the forward-looking map on what, when can we expect to play through the browser instead of through Mush Client, and like the big earth-shattering like email level blasts that we're aiming for, you know, early next year. The people doing the Rust conversion, same deal, early next year. Website conversion, early next year. You know, and I know you guys have heard, oh, well, end of year. You've heard of end of year twice now. The major difference is, though, is I don't think Edward's here tonight, and that's okay. When we're doing the rollout, when we're rolling out the roadmap for the town hall, I'll have our engineer come in and give you guys a in-depth description of where we're at with the transition process. Some very brief spoilers are, there are goblins and swords and inventories and players and rooms, and we're working on VMAP stuff. That's the 30-second version of where we're at with the code conversion stuff. And what I will give you as a temporary stopgap until I can give you a better answer is, last year when we were going through this process, I couldn't tell you what are the moving parts. If you were to say, what is the wrench in the gears that's stopping everything from turning and stop, and like, why do we not have Rust yet? What's stopping us from moving forward? I couldn't have answered that for you in January of last year because I didn't know. Now I do know. And I know, I can see the trajectory. I know exactly how many different file types there are that need to be converted. We know exactly which ones the problems are. We've had a master level Rust consultant come in and handle all of our database conversion. Like, the one of the most qualified people on the face of the planet is helping us with our backend conversion stuff so that we can do all this correctly. So this isn't being done blindly. It's not being done half-assed. It's being done professionally with everybody's eyes open and everybody hyper aware of every problem state that could exist in the future. We're going for the fences. Like, this is this is my Grand Slam project. Like, I love this game more than anything. I mean, with my family being the exception to that. You know, I run a lot of businesses. This is the most important business to me. So, and it's not about the dollars. It's about the community and the game and the value of the experience. And we all know what that is, or we wouldn't be playing a game that is as broken as it is and hanging out in meetings like this with people like me. We're going to keep doing what we're doing, and we're going to keep trying to provide you guys the best quality customer service and gameplay experience we can, with the ongoing dedication to doing better at that every day. So I really do appreciate you guys taking the time to report these problems and ask the questions the way you are, and like challenge the timelines and want to know like what is done, when are we finished, what's the objectives here. So don't stop asking those questions. I really appreciate them.
Appreciate them too, and we appreciate you, Alice. So thank you. Floopy has a two-parter, but I'll split it up into just one by one. The first part of Floopy's questions is, with the removal of Community Night attracting amulets, will there be an alternative non-RU paid option for replacing these for players to continue accessing hunters without paid participation?
So this one is kind of, there's a lot of moving parts to this, even though the question is actually really straightforward. Where's the best place to approach this from? Okay, so let's start here. Let's start at the beginning, but we're going to do this really succinctly. Hunters used to come automatically. They showed up when they showed up. They were harassment more than a benefit. There were a few people that really enjoyed just idling all day and killing a few free hunters they got. And that was like their jam. And like, yeah, I was one of those people for a long, long time. Storm, another good example of that. But they also interrupted every major run we did. And the higher level people got, masters coming meant bigger interruptions that usually meant in termination of runs like Avacax or Megafather or whatever. So the community actually voted to turn off hunters. The few nights, like, so there was a time where attracting amulets were given out on reunion night. The intent for those items was for them to be usable reunion night and then expire and go away. So they were meant to be a, you can camp hunters when there's double AP on the system and that's fine. And that isn't how they got implemented. They turned into these giant, it turned into like cumulative, like $25 for everybody pretty much every month. And like, that wasn't sustainable. And it wasn't the intent to begin with. But that doesn't actually answer your question though. The answer to your question is gonna sound weird, but there's already a way for you to access hunters in game without paid participation. Attracting amulets drop in a couple of different forms from a number of places. To put a bow on this, I would be willing to re-entertain a system-wide vote on whether or not we wanted to turn hunters back on system-wide. I personally don't care one way or another. I can wear an attracting to bring them to me, or I can wear a warding amulet to make them not come to me. So personally, I'm indifferent on that front. As far as not paid access, there's already not paid access. And she repops all the time, and the item drops pretty frequently, and there's more than one of them. If you guys are interested, I mean, we've voted on the hunter thing a couple of times, and every time, it's like greater than 75% of people are like, nah, just leave them off. We'd rather opt into them than have to opt out of them. Go check out Lady Bane if you don't want to pay to play. And community amulets are not going to be a thing anymore unless we can figure out how to make them work for the night only. I think that answers it.
And then the second part, or the other question that they had, reference and help protocols is a link that they sent, but the site that it leads to hasn't been updated since 2012. Is there another resource to access to expose the individual GMCP attributes used by the game and other protocol attributes that may be useful?
So this is one where I wasn't even aware. I don't, this is going to sound absolutely terrible, and I apologize. For the longest time, I didn't even know what GMCP and MPLX, like I didn't know what a lot of that stuff even was or what it did. And when I figured it out, I just assumed that my client would handle all that stuff because that's where all that stuff lives. Since then, I figured out that these things exist, but I also don't understand the extent to which everybody uses it. I didn't until we started doing the development work on dynamic clickable interface. And it turns out dynamic clickable interface, number one driving mechanism is GMCP. So in this process, we had to re-engineer how we, the game, use GMCP to interact with we, the players. The truthful answer is I personally don't have a better resource for you. The good answer is we don't have a choice but to document this stuff on our website soon. And you asking this question actually spurred a lengthy chunk of conversation during one of our meetings earlier, rationalizing the fact that these aren't terms that gamers have had to use in a long time. Like, if we're streamlining this stuff into our website, there are considerations that need to be made in terms of how do we telegraph, but let me say it differently. How do we make it so that when you're playing from the website, no one ever has to ask this question ever again? That's my objective. That is the good answer to the question that you've asked here. And I'm going to do my best to see what we can do about finding some existing documentation. If somebody knows of a link that already explains it a little bit, that would be great. We can just drop it in Discord as a public resource. Otherwise, I'm going to utilize our brilliant website people and have them be mindful of this problem to showcase the solution in our browser-based client.
Okay. So the last question we had was from Rivulet asking about increasing the size of the player base, which we kind of already touched on. And that's something that it's just stuff that's going on behind the scenes that we're like excited about when that happens. But just for time. Oh, Alice, did you want to say something?
If that's the question, you know, where is the question again? Is it in chat?
No, it was the last submitted question in the forums that I set up for it. Asking about like the plan of increasing our player base size.
Okay. Yep. Thanks for repeating the question for me. Okay. So, this information will be available on our website, and that's what we're ultimately building towards. We just don't want to make commitments until we're ready to endorse them. Right now behind the scenes, we're just calling it phase one, phase two, phase three, but we're working on accessibility. And so we've got major barriers. Like, our game is antiquated as shit unless we do something to change it. We've got to integrate with modern stuff like browsers and Google accounts and, you know, all that stuff. So until we can integrate with the modern society, we're just a 25, 30-year-old legacy text-based game. As soon as we become accessible again, we're one of the only text-based games that is accessible in this new environment. My first three spearheads, I'm not going to share with you the mystery final end goal yet, because I'm not ready to let that cat out of the bag yet. But the first three goals are get stable. Step one of the player acquisition process, once we're done with all of our back-end work, is get on Steam. The second is, now that we have a browser-based client, we can build a mobile client that interacts with the browser client, because the browser client is designed to function that way. I can't say that'll give us a free mobile client, but it gives us a significantly less expensive mobile client with a hell of a lot more robustness than we're going to get from Blowtorch or Muckluck. So, night and day improvement in that regard. So, and then between the lack of crashing, the continuity fixes, going through and rebalancing the storyline and making sure that the overpowered items are toned down, getting rid of legacy items, all that crap. And all that's done, we're aiming for Steam, Google, Android, and I mean, professionally managed, you know, I don't like presenting things from a failure state. Like I aim for an A, not for an F is really the punchline here. But even a failed game in Google gets 10,000 new users that stick around. That's not 10,000 downloads. That's just like, if you put it out there, there are people who will play it. There might be millions who don't, but there will most likely be tens of thousands that do. And the question that we've got to answer there is accessibility and marketing correct? And if it is, I'm not worried at all about our viability in those markets. So we're refocusing all of our laser cannons towards the best possible game and the broadest possible realistic audience. And that's how we plan on, you know, make the game more accessible, get more eyes on it or visually impaired people on it. And that's that, you know, I mean, that's 4/5 of the dream.
So just for the, in the interest of time, I wanted to let Rivulet and Eversor know, we got like your questions from the chat and from game. They're kind of the heavier questions for how much time we have left. So I'm more than happy to have Alice and the other immortals get some eyes on it to get answers written up so I can post them for you. But the last question that we'll have, is from Leo. She's wondering if there would be storage items for things like food, because cooking is very heavy and inventory intensive.
That is another one of those extremely onerous objects. And what I can tell you based on conversations that have occurred since the last question similar down this vein, the major component of whether or not we can reduce your storage capacity is going to be whether or not the objects can be tokenized. A tokenized object doesn't exist on your character in the same way, so it saves a ton of storage space. So the hypothetical implementation of that would be converting every food-based resource into a regent-like token to be interacted with. And I can't, I'm speaking purely from a, how do you make the moving gears turn in such a way that that's possible, hypothetically, but whether or not that's something that's even entertainable would be up to our development staff. And that's food goods, scrolls, manuals. We already took care of regents. There's a list of the giant offenders, and I don't have great answers for how we plan on reducing the inventory impact of those goods, but we do plan on doing it somehow. The shitty solution would be, here's a weight reducing container that holds it all. That's not a great solution. The other solution would be, I'll skip to the punchline because the not fun part is the reason to not do it. The other solution would involve putting resource limits. So you can only carry 4 salsa rojas and 4 olive oils. And like, you know, that doesn't sound fun to me. I mean, I'm already shuffling around a gajillion ingredients. Like, if I can get all my eggs at once, let me get them. Don't make me come back here over and over again. So I don't know. We don't have graceful judo solutions for some of the things. Manuals are fairly easy to tokenize, I think, but you know, what I can tell you as an answer to this is the people who are capable of solving the problem are also listening to the problem right now. So, yeah, we will keep you posted on that.
Okay. Awesome. Just from other stuff in chat and, from DMs, it looks like the plan when we can, and whenever we're able to share more about things of like what we're doing to gain a broader audience and bring people back into the game is something that people are really interested in. So because I'm part of that, I am like really excited to talk about that when we can. So thanks for being interested in it. For those that have talked about it and are talking about it in chat. But that was all the questions that we had time for today. And I want to personally thank everyone on the panel, all the Immortals listening, and everyone else that's here for being part of this. This is something I think that is really fun way to interact with you all, and for you also to kind of hear from people that you may not really see in game right now or even in the Discord server. And I, you know, hope that we keep doing this and it's something that you keep wanting to engage in. And I'll get off the floor if anyone else wants to say something.
Just a quick thanks and a repeat of what Juniper said. This is great, guys. I very much appreciate the contributions and the feedback and the participation from players and staff alike. This is I genuinely enjoy the process now, whereas I can't say that about other years of involvement with the game, sadly. So thanks, guys.
And I'd just like to steal what Sariel was going to come back on and say, which is goodbye.
Yeah, goodbye.
Wow, got him. All right, thanks again, everyone. We will have a recording, audio recording of this put into Discord later, and I'll let everyone know. And then again, the couple or a few questions that were missed that we didn't have time for, I will have some written up answers to post as well. So thanks so much, and y'all have a good rest of your night.
Bye, guys.